emissary. Walter laughed like the crack of a whip.
Nonsense! Your mind is clearly still muddled. Surgeon?
Yes, some confusion is quite natural. Don't trouble yourself, my lord.
But I'm telling you, it wasn't the captain or any of his men who injured me.
Mr. Taggart leaned over Nathaniel.
Now, now, don't agitate yourself. Too much laudanum will slow your recovery.
Nathaniel cringed at the thought of the bitter medicine and the powerless long sleep it brought. He needed his rest, but also required his wits about him.
I simply want the truth to be known.
His father stared at him imperiously.
The truth is that one of the most dreaded pirates in the New World kidnapped you and almost killed you once he had his ransom. They are a scourge that must be destroyed. All those devils care for is money.
He glanced around the room.
Of course, I would have paid any sum to see my son returned.
As the surgeon and Elizabeth nodded in agreement, Susanna piped up with,
I thought Bart said it was mostly counterfeit anyway.
Walter gritted his teeth.
Regardless, the Seahawk shall hang. That is all that matters.
Belatedly, he added,
and that Nathaniel is safe.
Sighing, he seemed to soften, coming closer to the bed to rest his hand on Nathaniel's arm.
We were greatly concerned for your welfare.
Despite everything, Nathaniel still wanted to believe his father cared, cringing at the childish longing welling up. A bewigged man appeared in the doorway.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Governor. We have a problem.
What is it? Walter snapped. Can't you see I'm tending to my son, who was nearly murdered by pirates?
More wood is needed to board up windows on the main street as the storm approaches.
Then get more bloody wood. Why should I be concerned with such trivial matters?
There aren't enough men left to cut it. As it transpires, several transports left yesterday for Jamaica in advance of the storm. More citizens fleeing.
Clearly all was not well in the least on Primrose Isle. Nathaniel wanted to ask for the details, but didn't wish to anger Walter any further at the moment.
We'll need to board up our windows as well, won't we?
Susanna asked. With a tight smile, Walter said,
Everything is in hand. Don't worry, my dear. Rest up, Nathaniel. When the storm is past, the pirate will arrive and his trial will begin. Your ordeal will soon be at an official end.
Walter strode out before Nathaniel could argue, and the surgeon banished the ladies to examine Nathaniel's wound thoroughly, poking and prodding, humming to himself from time to time. Finally he said,
It's healing well now that the infection has passed.
He'll be up and about soon enough.
He glanced at the darkening sky through the closest window.
Rest up, and by the time the sun returns, you'll be out of bed.
If his sluggish mind understood it all correctly, the storm's passing would herald Hawke's arrival. Nathaniel nodded.
Yes, I'll certainly be on my feet by then.
Bart nearly carried him down to a small, windowless chamber on the ground floor that night. But Nathaniel had taken a few steps at least. Granted, the pain threatened to bring up the broth and small amount of bread he'd eaten, but he'd kept his food down. While it might have been a tiny victory, he'd take it. After Bart had gone and Susanna fretted over Nathaniel, he asked,
How about some Don Quixote? I haven't heard that in years.
Susanna winced as glass shattered in the distance. The upper floor of the house in particular taking a lashing from the storm. The wind howled, and Nathaniel wondered for the 100th time where Hawke was and if he suffered. Would the privateers treat him fairly? He had once been one of them, and if their letter of marque was revoked for any reason, they would suddenly be deemed pirates too. Perhaps Hawke could appeal to their reason. Nathaniel didn't hold out much hope. But it was all he could cling to.
Yes, a good choice. I'll fetch it from the library.
Susanna left the door ajar, and Nathaniel listened to the household staff bustle about. Walter was holed up in his study, the baby and wet nurse in the sitting room, where Susanna would sleep as well. The upper floor had been deemed unsafe, even with boards hastily nailed over the windows. Earlier, Susanna had insisted she wasn't tired in the least, and Nathaniel was happy to hear her read to him again while the baby slept for a few hours. He needed something, anything, to keep his mind from fixating on Hawk.
Have they hurt him? Is he angry with me? Does he love me as I love him? I do love him more than anything. Is he afraid? Does he despair?
Nathaniel had last beheld him much as he had the very first time, Hawk wearing his costume, his armour, that announced him a fearsome pirate king. The rings on his fingers and slash of red around his waist. The steel of his cutlass winking on his hip. The coat that acted almost as a cape. Yet he would remember Hawk not as the myth, but the man. Scarred and tired, passionate and tender. The raw terror on his face as he'd uttered Nathaniel's name aloud, leaning over him, shielding him, holding his fingers so tightly before tearing himself away.
All right, here we are.
Susanna jumped as a gust of wind shrieked, rain battering the house. From what little Nathaniel had seen of the two-story building, it was solidly constructed, with at least a dozen rooms. How would the rest of the colony fare? From the sound of it, there was little left. Susanna pulled her winged chair close to the narrow bed, which was more of a cot. She cleared her throat and began. Her familiar voice and cadence soothed Nathaniel's raw edges enough that he could unclench his fists and breathe evenly. Susanna read into the night as Mother Nature railed, threatening at times, it seemed, to tear the house from its foundations. Nathaniel closed his eyes and tried to focus only on Susanna's warm, familiar voice. As she read, the wind and rain keened. He shivered. The earlier heat chased away. Soaked to the skin, Bart stuck his head in, water dripping into his eyes from his floppy curls. He had an appearance not unlike a massive shaggy dog. Susanna waved him in, assuring him the baby was sleeping comfortably. At least until the next time she woke wailing, as babies inevitably would.
"You must promise not to go out again," Susanna said. "Please stay here until this passes."
Bart sighed, wiping water from his face.
"The remaining people are in need, and there aren't enough hands. It feels cowardly to hole up here with the women and children."
He looked guiltily to Nathaniel. "What I mean to say is..."
"I know,"
Nathaniel assured him.
"I take no offence. I possess the strength of a kitten at the moment." "Father is here, and he's not infirm," Susanna said.
Bart raised his eyebrows.
"Regretfully, your father is not a man I aspire to emulate."
He took her hand.
"Forgive me for speaking so frankly."
She sighed and plopped back into her chair.
"No apology necessary. We all know father's limitations, which have become all too clear."
Nathaniel asked,
"But what do you mean, the remaining people? What is happening on this island? There's something going on that no one wants to explain. I know the colony was struggling, but it sounds as if it has collapsed. I assure you I can withstand the cold truth."
Sharing a look with Susanna, Bart said,
"Let me get another chair."
When he was settled, the door pulled halfway shut. He nodded to Susanna, who leaned toward the bed, her voice low.
"Oh, Nathaniel, it's a disaster. They say the terrain is all wrong. Too sandy in some places, too rocky in others, far too hilly. The men who initially proposed this colony to England were fools, overconfident that no matter the landscape, it could be moulded and tamed to do our bidding."
Bart added,
"To be fair to your father, that was not his doing. The rest, however..."
Susanna sighed.
"Father wasted untold amounts of money insisting on planting crops that wouldn't take. The colonists have left in droves. And the rumour from Whitehall is that the Crown is abandoning this place and cutting its losses. Father has failed in every conceivable way. He hasn't admitted it yet, but we're going back to England. Or perhaps somewhere else in the New World. There's simply no alternative.
He and Mr. Davenport are on shaky ground, Bart said, unbuttoning his wet jacket. Davenport gave up a successful venture in Jamaica, expecting more power here than he had in Kingston. If not for your engagement to Elizabeth, I fear their partnership would dissolve completely. Walter would have had you married when you were barely conscious if Susanna hadn't spoken out so strongly against it.
Nathaniel's heart skipped. You don't think I should marry her, Susie?
She blinked.
Oh, of course you should. She's an absolute treasure, isn't she, Bart?
Yes, very level-headed and a kind soul. She'd make a fine wife for any man.
Any but me.
Susanna added,
She deserves a proper wedding in a church, wearing her fine dress. And surely you'll want to be awakened in your right mind on your wedding day. Yes.
He had to agree. There's no telling now when this pirate will arrive for his trial, Bart said. Your father had already ordered the gallows constructed, which was a complete waste of time, not to mention lumber. He shook his head. These winds are like nothing I've ever seen. I fear there will be very little left when the dust settles, as it were. They should have just tried him in Kingston, but your father insisted he preside, as if it will somehow legitimize this place and save it. His pride will be the death of us all if we're not careful. Susanna sighed.
Yes, he was determined that his colony would be the most like England, no matter how impractical that might be. All show and no substance.
One wonders why he ever wanted to leave England in the first place. Bart grimaced. Of course, as a fifth son of an earl myself, I understand wanting to strike out in the New World. There should be more opportunities here. He glanced at Susanna and lowered his voice further. In fact, Mr. Davenport and I have had some discussions. He still has many connections in Jamaica and a respected name in shipping. There could be opportunities for us there. You, me, Nathaniel, and Elizabeth.
Susanna stared at him. But what of father? We couldn't just...
Why not? Nathaniel asked. Why should our fates be controlled by his whims? Haven't they already been long enough?
Yes, Bart hissed. Quite long enough.
He took Susanna's hand again, holding it between his own.
My dear, your loyalty is one of your best qualities. But the time has come when we must remove ourselves from your father's shadow. With haste.
He's right, Susie, you know he is.
Tears glistened in her eyes.
Yes.
She swallowed hard.
I must check on Grace. Please excuse me.
When she was gone, Bart rubbed his face.
You agree, then, that we shall leave Primrose Isle as soon as this storm and trial are over?
He looked up as another shriek of wind battered the windows.
Whatever unfolds, I feel strongly that we must try our fortunes away from your father's influence.
Nathaniel said a quick prayer for Hawk and nodded. I couldn't agree more.
He'd slept fitfully for a time, and Susanna had returned in the night, the storm still raging, dark circles under her eyes. They didn't speak of their father or Bart's nascent plan. Susanna had always been practical, and while she sometimes needed to brood on an idea for a time, she would accept good sense. They had simply shared a tired smile, and she'd briefly clasped his hand before again opening Don Quixote. Some time later, the candle guttering, she read,
I was born free, and that I might live in freedom I chose the solitude of the fields. In the trees of the mountains I find society. The clear waters of the brooks are my mirrors, and to the trees and waters I make known my thoughts and charms. I am a fire afar off, a sword laid aside. He couldn't catch his breath. Was that what Hawk wanted, despite his protestations? A sword laid aside?
If Nathaniel could somehow free him, would Hawk leave piracy behind and build a life with him? Despite the storm's fury, reminding him that there was no easy path, Nathaniel yearned for fields and trees, clear waters and freedom.
and Hawk had confessed it once as well. I could find a quiet island, build a home strong enough to withstand the summer storms, fish and farm, stay close to safe harbor.
Darling, Susanna asked, are you feeling unwell? No, fine. Is he safe now?
She pressed her hand to his forehead.
Are you certain? You were trembling.
I'm sure. I was thinking of the future. Susanna squeezed his shoulder.
There's no reason to worry. Father always lands on his feet and...
She sighed.
Well, you heard, Bart. It seems we very well might have another avenue open to us. We shall make the best of it. Mr. Davenport will see you and Elizabeth well settled.
She frowned at his silence.
What is it?
Elizabeth, I can't marry her. Susanna stared in clear shock.
Surely you don't find her lacking. She has been so steadfast. I know I'm getting ahead of myself since you've only just met her, really. But when you spend more time with her, I'm certain... It won't matter. I can't marry her. Susie, I don't love her.
She shook her head with affectionate exasperation.
Well, not yet. You've had no time together. Love will come, I'm sure of it.
Nathaniel's throat tightened along with his chest.
It's impossible. Why on earth is that?
Glancing to the door, she went and closed it firmly before returning to her chair and folding her hands.
She is a wonderful match. Practical, to be sure, what with her diary, but I've grown to love her as a sister already. Truly, she is good and kind, and she possesses a certain understated beauty.
Susanna's brows drew together, her mouth turning down.
You've never struck me as a man whose head is turned over much by fancy faces. I hope you don't mean to reject her on superficial grounds without taking the care to really know her.
It's not that. She is quite pretty enough. I don't care about that.
Then what is the issue? This has been planned for months. You are promised to each other. Our fathers have agreed.
She laughed. It's not as if you're in love with someone else. His throat closed completely, and he had to turn his head away from Susanna's sharp gaze. Her fingers were firm on his chin.
Nathaniel!
She hissed.
What is this? Don't tell me all those times you scampered away to fields and forest it was because you were meeting someone.
A gasp escaped her lips, and she pressed her hand to her chest.
Are you pining? Do you have a secret, sweetheart? Please,
he whispered, barely holding the agony at bay.
I can't tell you.
Hawk had left him, yet he couldn't stop hearing his name finally tumble from Hawk's lips. The way Hawk had clung to his fingers, the wild fear in his eyes, all artifice stripped before he allowed Nathaniel to be torn away.
But you can. Of course you can. Anything, my dear. Tell me, who is the lady?
In whom could he confide if not Susanna? His breath stuttered. Without warning, he stood at the precipice. Outside, torrents of rain streamed down, and in the little windowless room they were as alone as they could be. Perhaps as alone as they ever would be again. His sister watched him with concern, her eyes imploring. Before he could talk himself out of it, he stripped away the last vestiges of the disguise he'd worn since they were children.
There is no lady. I'm a sodomite.
The words hung there as the wind keened. For a terrible moment, the Susanna stared with wide eyes. Nathaniel thought she would abandon him and pretend he'd never spoken at all. Then she sat back, her gaze going distant.
He could barely get her name out. Susanna. I should have known. I should have seen this. Perhaps I did.
She spoke absently, as if to herself. He had to ask, although his stomach churned, fearing the answer.
I know it's unnatural. A sin. Do you hate me?
Her gaze snapped to his, and she bolted up straight.
What? Oh, heavens, never! She gripped his hand. Never. You are my brother.
Blinking back tears, she said,
More than that, we were always such good chums, weren't we?
Nathaniel could only nod, his throat too thick for words. He squeezed her fingers. She swiped at her eyes with her free hand. All right. She nodded to herself, mind clearly working, digesting this revelation.
Yes, all right.
Her face creased.
Do you think it a sin? Does it feel like one, to be the way you are?
Perhaps it should, but no. I don't think it a sin any more. I've accepted it now.
I've been this way for almost as long as I can remember, and I wanted to tell you so many times.
Oh, Nathaniel, surely you know I would never turn my back on you. Never.
He clung to her hand. I prayed you would not.
Certainly not.
No, you are my brother, and,
well, this is a shock. But you are not an evildoer.
Still, it's not only my mind that's lacking.
I'm not a normal man. I never shall be.
When you were born,
she broke off with a sudden sob, tears overflowing.
I watched Mother die, and I promised God I would look after you. Did I fail you?
No, this is no fault of yours, I promise.
He couldn't fight his own tears.
No one could have cared for me better, Susie.
Thank you.
He pushed up, ignoring the scream of pain in his gut, and pulled her into an embrace as they wept. They were all sniffles and gulping breaths, and when Susanna eased back to the chair, she wiped her cheeks.
All right. Now, is there someone you care for?
Fresh tears threatened as he whispered.
Yes. Yes, all right.
She laughed, slightly giddy, eyes still wet.
I keep saying that, don't I? I'm sorry. So, this... Well, who is he? Someone from Worthingside? You often spent time in the woods nearest to that estate. Mr. Stanford, perhaps? He was still unmarried last I heard.
No, it's no one from home. It's
on the ship.
Her brows shot up.
The merchant ship? I don't recall that you spent time with anyone in particular.
Eyes widening, she whispered.
You don't mean... My God, the pirate ship?
He nodded.
Captain Hawk. The captain? The man who took you?
She waited for his reply, mouth agape.
Yes. I know what you must be thinking.
I don't understand. What are you saying, that you... That you and he...
With a pirate? With that nefarious man?
She gasped.
When you arrived, you were quite bruised. Tell me truthfully, did he... Ravish you? Force you to submit to his cruel desires?
No, I swear, I wanted it. I lay with him willingly.
But it's unthinkable. Nathaniel, it's...
Susanna pressed her hand to her chest, lowering her voice conspiratorially.
It's terribly thrilling.
His heart skipped, hope blooming amid the dark muck of misery. He waited for her to continue, watching her breathe fast and shallow. She gave a little gasp, covering her mouth again, as if shocked by herself. She lowered her hand and whispered,
Did you truly, with that pirate captain?
His throat felt like he'd swallowed gravel. He sounded like it, too.
I did. I was his prisoner, granted, but I chose it of my own free will. He was... I began to know him, the real man behind the myth. I...
Emotion choked Nathaniel.
I began to love him.
Love? She murmured, eyes like saucers.
I didn't think... So it's more than simply...
She waved her hand.
Yes, much more. There was tenderness and sharing. I'm not sure how to describe it. But he stabbed you. You almost died. It wasn't him, nor any of the crew. It was Father's messenger. He tried to kill Hawk, and I jumped between them. I couldn't bear to see him hurt. My goodness.
She found her face with her hand.
I feel like one of those terribly fragile women who are prone to the vapors.
He sat with difficulty. Should I call for someone? He threw back the blanket, groaning as he tried to swing his legs around.
No, hush.
She urged him back to the mattress and tucked the blanket around him. I've never suffered from delirium a day in my life. I shan't start now. Exhaling a long breath, she nodded. All right. You love this man. Does he love you? Nathaniel's stomach swooped.
Does he? Am I fooling myself most cruelly?
I think he might. I want to find out. I must! I want to be with him. Right by his side. Live our days like... well, like anyone else, I suppose.
She took this in. I confess it's difficult to imagine. It was so fearsome.
It's an act, most of it at least. Father forced him into that life by revoking his letter of marque unfairly years ago.
And yes, he's committed many crimes.
But there is more to him, I swear.
Kindness and longing. He's a man like any other. Everyone sees him as a pirate.
Because that's what he is, a killer.
So am I.
But Nathaniel could not utter it aloud. If he exposed this truth as well, he'd never be able to look Susanna in the face again for fear of what he'd see there.
Yes, without question, yet I accept it.
If that exposes a deficiency in my character, I have to accept that as well. I can't marry Elizabeth. I could never be a proper husband. It wouldn't be fair to her.
As unnatural as it may be to desire other men, it is my nature. I have made my peace with it. I must find a way to have a life where I am not in misery all of my days, hiding, alone, even if surrounded by a family.
Her face crumpled.
Oh, Nathaniel, it would break my heart.
No, I would never wish that for you.
You should have love and comfort and happiness.
She sat back and was silent, wiping her eyes. She was quiet for so long that Nathaniel grew sleepy. He was so easily drained, and he closed his eyes, listening to her steady breathing, her familiar presence a balm. He'd revealed his core, and she hadn't turned away. After a time, she spoke again.
They say it's only about base desires, two men being together, venal and depraved. But as I think about it, I remember a case of two men in Guildford who shared a cottage. An accusation was made, and soon it was a scandal. One went to prison, the other the gallows. If I recall, there had been suspicion of them for years. Years? I didn't consider it at the time. But why would they have lived together for so long if there was no affection?
Granted, plenty of marriages sorely lack it,
but they had chosen their companionship.
He opened his eyes and found Susanna's full of tears again. She shook her head.
That pirate, Father will see him hanged. And my God, you would be in such danger if the truth were discovered. They could kill you for this love.
I must stop the trial. With him I was whole, a worthy man, powerful in my own way, not stupid and useless. With him I felt I could do anything, that the world has new possibilities to be unearthed. As seashells are by the retreating tide.
That there is so much more, unseen but ever present under the surface.
He remembered the roughness of Hawk's beard against his face, countered with the softness of his lips, the wet slide of his tongue, and how Nathaniel had wished they could kiss forever under the palm trees. How he'd felt utterly protected and cherished in the aftermath of death and destruction.
But how on earth will you stop the trial?
It was a fine question, and Nathaniel fervently wished he had the answer. Chapter 22. Never again. Those two words echoed, taunting Hawk endlessly in the black belly of the privateer's brigantine. The air was dank in the small hold serving as his cell, and he was almost certain a storm brewed. Sweat clung to his skin. His leather coat was musty and damp. The chains on his wrists pulled tight, wearing away at his festering skin where he'd uselessly attempted to pry himself loose. His feet had swelled in his boots, and he couldn't have yanked them off if he tried.
He supposed his one consolation was that he wasn't trapped in the bowels of a Royal Navy ship. From what he'd overheard before being locked away, Walter Bainbridge had hired privateers to thwart him. The Navy could not be negotiated with, but privateers? Perhaps. He had no notion of time in the blackness but for the distant bells and occasional delivery of brackish water and scraps of food. Nathaniel's screams of agony echoed in his mind. Why the devil had he wasted so much time keeping Nathaniel at bay? He should have kissed him every moment he could. Now he never would again. And it tore at him with razor teeth. Did Nathaniel live? Hawk prayed uselessly to any god listening that he'd survived, that he hadn't died to save Hawk's sorry life. It played out again and again in his memory. Nathaniel hurling himself in front of that blade, accepting its grievous wound without a second thought. Hawk hadn't believed he could love again, and in that moment he'd known how wrong he'd been, how deeply love could truly gash, crippling him. He offered bargain after bargain to the universe, promising up anything, everything, in return for Nathaniel's safety. To not know Nathaniel's fate was torture, the misery waking him from fitful bouts of sleep, his heart seizing, lungs frozen. Of course he'd asked for news, and of course he was denied. He hadn't even been told where he was being taken for trial. And what of the men? He'd drawn the attention of the privateers with explosions and mayhem so Snell and the others who'd survived the battle could escape. He'd stayed with his ship as long as he could, and would have remained to the end if he hadn't been beaten into submission by too many men to fight. The damned Manta might sail again, but without the Seahawk. He laughed harshly, rats scurrying at the burst of sound. The Seahawk was dead, at least in spirit, with his body soon to follow. His ending had been inevitable, and Hawk only wished it had not come at Nathaniel's expense. All that for a ransom that meant nothing now. He should have left Nathaniel aboard that merchant ship with his sister, should have left him to his safe, comfortable future, stifling and unfulfilling as it might have been. One night, or day, he awoke hard, craving Nathaniel. In his dream, Nathaniel had reached for him, entreating him to come to bed. Yet Hawk had been unable to move. Now he ached, and not merely to fuck. He yearned to hear Nathaniel's cries of pleasure, to bring him bliss with mouth and hands and cock. Then to hold him as they slept, breathe him in, close and safe and warm. God, to kiss him. The loss should have been like an arm or leg destroyed in battle and then excised. Over the years, several of Hawk's men had suffered this fate, the mangled, useless limbs sawed off before it could cause any more damage. An infection could spread to the bloodstream. That ruined flesh and bone was tossed overboard, abandoned in the ship's wake to be devoured by the creatures of the deep. Yet Nathaniel refused to be left behind. The loss of him was more than a phantom ache or a hollowed-out chasm. No. It filled Hawk to his very limits, unyielding pressure against his skin, expanding with every breath, choking him. Hawk wished his own soft, useless flesh would dissolve and leave him made of only pitiless bone. To love could only be madness. He'd been so certain he'd learned that lesson after John, but locked away with only rats for company. It was clear he was a glutton for punishment. That Nathaniel had thrown himself into harm's way for Hawk's sake clawed at him, the guilt a living, pulsing creature. He would give anything to change it, to take the pain away and keep Nathaniel unharmed. Hawk clenched his empty hands. It was foolishness to yearn for a memento he could touch, some token or scrap of cloth or jewelry, Nathaniel's plain-handled dagger even. Hawk had tucked it in his boot. but it had been confiscated. Lost to him now. There was nothing tangible left of Nathaniel. Even the scratches on his chest, the marks Nathaniel had made when he'd insisted their relationship was real, were gone, his traitorous flesh mending. Real. As the days passed in perpetual darkness, Hawk did wonder if it had all been a feverish dream. He knew distantly that his captivity could have been worse. He wasn't tortured, and they shoved in enough water and hard biscuits to keep him alive. Torment wasn't being trapped in the stinking bowels of the brig, knowing he would soon die. That he could accept. That fate he'd expected for years. It was the idea of living the rest of his miserable life without Nathaniel that was utterly loathsome. True hell was to love. When the storm hit, he wasn't surprised, the portent thick even in the scant air that reached the filth of his cell. He hated not being at the helm, and could only hope the men in charge were able. He had no reason to think they weren't. But as he was tossed from side to side like a child's plaything, he wasn't so sure. The shackles around his wrists were attached to the wall, and his shoulders burned as he was thrown about. He feared they might be wrenched from their sockets. Which, of course, conjured memories of Nathaniel racing up the rigging to rescue O'Connell. Fearless and brave and beautiful. The yearning would have brought Hawk to his knees if he hadn't already been sprawled, powerless in the heaving waves. Squeezing his eyes shut, even though he was in darkness, he allowed himself the luxury of pretending he was back in the cabin that had been his only home for so long. Returned to his bed, Nathaniel sweet and sighing in his arms, their lips meeting endlessly. No words needed. They'd survived. And judging by the ship's speed and telltale noises echoing along the hull, they were nearing a harbour and making to drop anchor. Sure enough, sailors came soon to drag him from his cell, pulling and shoving him like an animal. Wrists still shackled, he was barely able to get his feet under him. The captain, a tall, older man named Taylor, who'd styled his greying hair as if it were a wig with curls over his ears, approached below decks, scowling. He buttoned his waistcoat.
"This is your final port of call, scum. I can't decide which is the worse offence, the piracy or desertion. Suppose it doesn't much matter, given you'll hang regardless. Shame you won't have a bigger audience."
To the crew nearby he announced,
"I'm taking him ashore with the vanguard. As soon as we have our money we're leaving this godforsaken place."
Blinking in the harsh glare, refusing to bow his head, Hawk shuffled onto the main deck, and saw Primrose Isle by the light of day. Where the fuck's the rest of it? Chapter 23 The crash reverberated so violently the windows in the drawing room, which were still covered by slapdash boards, rattled. The storm had raged for days, but the sun had finally reappeared. Nathaniel pushed back his chair at the empty breakfast table, wincing as he stood. He followed the rumble of his father's indistinct shouting, meeting Susanna in the hall. She drew up short.
"Why aren't you in bed? I was about to bring your tray." "Because I've been in bed quite long enough. I shall go mad if I don't move, even if it's only shuffling to the table. And why would you be bringing my breakfast?"
She tucked back a loose brown curl, her hair tied in a hasty knot, flour sprinkling her blue silk skirt.
"The servants have fled. They waited until the storm abated just enough, and they're gone. Either by sea or into the interior, it doesn't matter which. Not Cecily, thank God, but the others." "You mean the slaves?"
Susanna's face flushed.
"Yes. Good."
She smiled.
"Yes, I think it jolly well is good. Now we need to abandon ship as well. Bart is talking to Father about Mr. Davenport's plans to return to Jamaica, and the opportunities he could provide us."
She whispered,
"I haven't told Bart that you'll be breaking your engagement. Best to let that unfold."
He nodded as Father roared at the end of the hall, and Bart stormed from the study to stalk down the corridor, his face an alarming shade of scarlet, breeches and waistcoat splattered with mud. Bart hissed.
"He is being entirely unreasonable. I swear he has gone quite mad. He's still acting as if there's a colony left to govern. He won't go down to see the destruction. Perhaps things would be different if the buildings had been erected with the care necessary, but barely anything is left standing."
He rubbed his face, dark circles under his eyes.
"On that note, I must return to see what further assistance I can give."
He kissed Susanna's cheek and nodded to Nathaniel. They watched him go, and Nathaniel squared his shoulders.
"I'm going to speak with Father." "Dressed like that, Father will—"
She shook her head.
"Listen to me. What nonsense. Yes, go speak with him. I'll see about breakfast."
She gave his arm a squeeze. His feet were bare and his white shirt loose, but he'd pulled on clean breeches. When Nathaniel opened the study door, he found his father dressed fully, although one stocking sagged at the ankle and his ridiculous wig was askew. A bookcase had been toppled in his rage, a casualty that slumped across the far corner, gouging the polished floor. The boards had been torn from the study's windows, likely by Bart, since Father's buckled shoes still shone. Not a speck of mud evident.
"What?"
Father barked. There were many things to say, and Nathaniel didn't know how to begin any. So he decided to jump directly into the fray.
"Captain Hawk wasn't the first honest privateer you cheated, was he? How many men did you and your corrupt partners unfairly doom to the gallows as pirates so you could seize their ships and cargoes for your own gain, lying to England about their worth?"
Walter stared at him for a long moment, stunned, as if the gilt-framed oil painting of some ancestor hunting with a dog at his feet had come to life. Finally he said,
"After all I've done to see you home safely, you would interrogate me? I shouldn't be surprised. As ungrateful as ever."
"Answer the question. How many privateers did you cheat?"
Walter waved a dismissive hand.
"Privateers? Pirates? There's hardly a difference."
"The difference is that privateers are endorsed by the Crown, given letters of marque to legitimize them. They aid England against her enemies. If you want men to follow England's rules, then you must abide by them as well."
"These men are savages, as you should well know."
He scowled.
"Look at the state of you. This is civilization, and you will dress and act accordingly."
Nathaniel ignored that.
"Some men are beasts, yes. But many have been left with no options to make a living. To have any sort of freedom from horrendous conditions. To get paid fairly. Or paid at all."
Scoffing, Walter said,
"Worthless dregs of men. Besides, your argument, if one can call it that, has a fatal flaw. Captain Hawk is a deserter from the Royal Navy."
Behind his desk, he snatched up a sheaf of paper and thrust it at Nathaniel. Then his face twisted cruelly.
"But you can't, being utterly feeble-minded. Leave this business to the men who understand it. Men with all their wits."
Despite Nathaniel's best efforts to steel himself, the blows landed. He opened his mouth, then shut it again, and Walter sensed blood in the water.
"Shall I read it to you? I'll use small words."
He cleared his throat.
"Michael Biddle incited a mutiny aboard the HMS Leaside, then deserted on the 12th day of—"
Nathaniel stopped listening to his father, instead rolling the name around in his mind with care, as if the words might break. Michael Biddle. Michael. An angel's name, and if Hawk heard that, he'd snort and say there were only devils here. The pang of longing rocked Nathaniel, and he had to reach out for the edge of Walter's desk. Lord, to hear Hawk's voice again and feel the rough warmth of his touch. Simply to talk to him. To just be. To do anything as long as they were together. Nathaniel would rescue him, no matter the cost.
"And as such, Michael Biddle,"
Walter sneered disdainfully,
"now known as the notorious pirate the Sea Hawk, should receive no quarter."
Standing straight again, ignoring the dull throbbing of his wound, Nathaniel clenched his fists, thinking of the scars on Hawk's flesh.
"A deserter of a navy that enslaved him? You talk of savages. How is our government any better? They stole him from his home and impressed him against his will. Yes, he eventually deserted under a cruel tyrant of a captain, after years of service. And despite this, he still wanted to aid his country. You destroyed that. He wasn't the first, was he? You lied and stole. You cheated for your own gain."
"Oh, for God's sake!"
Walter's face reddened and creased.
"Enough of this nonsense! What does it matter? This pirate almost killed you, and you argue for his welfare? You truly are a simpleton."
"You forget that I was there. I know it was your man who attacked, waiting for his opening to kill Captain Hawk. I foiled his assassination attempt. He had to have known it was suicide. I wonder how you convinced him to do your bidding, what threat you employed, and why you tried to have Captain Hawk killed like that and not in a public spectacle."
"If that bumbling fool Taylor had been on time with the brigantine..."
Walter broke off, nostrils flaring.
"I had to have a secondary plan in place. The pirate had to die one way or another. I could not be bested by that nothing of a man. I had to prove that pirates will fall if they dare cross Governor Bainbridge. I had to be the one responsible for the Sea Hawk's demise."
He slammed his fist onto the desk, an inkpot rattling.
"I am to be respected."
"And what of me? If your assassin had hit his target, do you think the pirates would still have released me? Or if they'd realized the ransom was largely counterfeit?"
Walter's cheek twitched, a nervous tick.
"It would have been regrettable. But in war, some losses must be borne."
Nathaniel stared at his father. This stranger in a crooked wig who had loomed so large over his life, even from across the ocean. His voice was hoarse as he said,
"You're the criminal."
Narrowing his eyes, Walter hissed,
"We both know you haven't the wits to understand how the world works. You are my greatest disappointment. To think, I was so determined to have a son."
He broke off, swallowing thickly.
"I might still have my Margaret if not for you."
Guilt slashed through Nathaniel, anger eager on its heels.
"I didn't ask to be born so you could prove yourself a man with a proper heir. Not that there's anything to inherit. You are bankrupt, morally and otherwise."
Ignoring the jab, Walter shrugged.
"Temporarily. There is a fortune up for grabs, and you will marry the Davenport girl and acquire it. Her brother is dead, and her father has willed everything to her. Even if the fool returns to Jamaica, as long as you marry the girl, we will eventually have enough to rebuild here. I'll make the Crown see that Primrose Isle is not dead. Davenport's an old man. His heart is failing. God willing, it won't be long until the girl inherits."
"I won't marry her. I don't love her father."
Walter gaped.
"Love? What does that have to do with anything? I know you are an imbecile, so I will explain the situation slowly. Marriage? Fuck you!"
Walter jerked, more blood rushing to his face.
"My boy, you are treading on thin ground."
Nathaniel shook his head, saying it louder this time.
"Fuck you! I won't give up my life for your delusion. You've destroyed this place with your greed. Almost everyone has fled. Susanna and Bart are going to Jamaica with Mr. Davenport. The Crown pulled out the militia weeks ago, Bart told me. There's nothing left. He said the buildings are almost all flattened, but for this one and several others, it's over, Father."
The bell at the front door rang distantly, and in the silence following it, they stared at each other. The paper in Walter's hands shook, and he smoothed out the pages on his desk.
I will not accept defeat. Primrose Isle will thrive. So help me, I shall be respected.
The bell rang again, and he snapped.
For God's sake, why isn't anyone answering that?
Because they've all gone, Father. It is the worst wickedness to enslave people, and I pray they are never returned to you. A voice called. Hello.
In here, Walter barked. What do you want?
The messenger appeared in the doorway, a boy of about 12 with a shock of blonde curls and mud kicking his shoes and trousers almost to the knees.
The pirate has been delivered.
As Nathaniel tried not to sag in relief, Walter clapped his hands once.
Ah, some good news this morning. Excellent.
Captain Taylor is demanding his fee, sir. He's taken the pirate back aboard until you deliver it.
Nathaniel eyed his father's pinched face.
My God, he doesn't have it.
His mind whirled. If the messenger relayed that to Taylor, there was no telling what would become of Hawk. Nathaniel spoke to the messenger.
Please tell Captain Taylor he will be paid in full tomorrow morning. In the wake of the storm's devastation, the governor is occupied assisting his citizens.
With a dubious glance at Walter, the boy nodded and scurried away. A vein pulsed in Walter's temple.
I do not require your assistance. I am the governor, and my word is law. When I demand the prisoner be handed over, Taylor will do as instructed or regret it.
You'll revoke his letter of marque, too. Without a single redcoat to help enforce your rule.
Nathaniel bit his tongue. Let Walter entertain his delusions for the moment. Walter spoke almost to himself.
Yes, let Taylor keep him tonight, and tomorrow at noon Captain Hawk shall swing. It will be a historic day for Primrose Isle. We have withstood the hurricane, and we will see the fearsome pirate who has terrorized these seas brought to justice. They said it couldn't be done, that he was some kind of sorcerer. Now the new world will see he is only flesh and blood, thanks to me.
Nathaniel's feet itched to run to the harbour. But he had to be patient. There was only one thing to do, and he would have to wait for the cover of darkness.
Nathaniel?
He tried to smile. Susanna's brow creased, and she swiped at a stray curl, her skin flushed.
You're staring. What's the matter?
I'm memorizing your dear face because I shall never see it again.
Nothing.
Grace fussed in her arms, but Susanna waved off Cecily. Elizabeth smiled wanly and said to Nathaniel,
Your sister's such a dedicated mother. I hope it comes as naturally to me.
She worried a pleat on her full skirt between her fingers, the tight bodice of her yellow dress thrusting up her bosoms. Traces of dirt clung stubbornly to the dress's hem, although she tried to clean her slippers. She had to be unbearably hot. He answered. He belatedly added,
I'm sure you'll make a fine mother.
And Elizabeth beamed. Guilt simmered in his gut. Even in the shade of the house, which had lost most of the tiles from the roof and several windows, the afternoon heat blistered. Still, they dutifully sat at a round table. Bart had brought it out from one of the drawing rooms, since the previous garden set had been snapped into kindling. The governor's house was inland and on a rise, a view of the sea from the ruined garden stretching out in the distance to the east, away from the commotion of the harbour. From this vantage point, there was only twisted, tangled foliage, a sea of green giving way to blue. They drank tea and ate day-old biscuits, pretending the island didn't lie in waste around them, that felled trees with gnarled roots didn't litter the property, that the remaining inhabitants of Primrose Isle weren't fleeing, too many buildings blown asunder, the failing colony now clearly irrecoverable. From a distance, the strident voices of Mr. Davenport and Walter reached them, the words too faint to make out. Elizabeth swallowed thickly and stirred another cube of sugar into her tea with rapid clanks of her spoon.
Susanna gave her a sympathetic smile, then raised her eyebrows at Nathaniel. Yet he couldn't muster any soothing words, not when they were still pretending that Elizabeth and Nathaniel would marry. The truth seethed on his tongue, eager to fly into the still air amid the cicada's droning chorus. "I'm a sodomite, and the Pirate King fucked me every way you could imagine, and some you likely can't even fathom. I'm going to rescue him and cleave to him if he'll have me. I want to live out my days at his side, because even if they are severely numbered, it will be truly living." "Is it ever this hot in England?" Elizabeth asked, her voice trembling as another echo of their father's fury reached what was left of the garden. Even the grass beneath their feet churned to bits. Susanna and Nathaniel looked to each other, and Susanna leaned over to give Elizabeth's hand a kind squeeze. "No, summers are very pleasant there. We left when I was so young that I can't recall. I should like to visit one day. Although most of all I'd like to go home to Jamaica." Nathaniel said, "I think you soon shall. I hope you do, with all my heart."
Walter's voice rang out, "If there will be no gallows built in time, then we'll hang him from a goddamn tree."
Susanna's mouth tightened, her sympathetic gaze too much to bear. Nathaniel imagined Hawke aboard the brig for the 100th time. So close and still out of reach until nightfall. Was he injured? Fed? Had the privateers treated him fairly? Bile surged into his throat at the thought of Hawke's suffering, and he gripped his teacup so tightly he might have shattered it if Susanna hadn't covered his quivering hand with her own, guiding the cup back to its saucer.
"Are you well?"
Elizabeth asked, leaning toward him, then shaking her head.
"But of course you aren't. It must distress you terribly knowing that monster is so close at hand."
"It does," he agreed, struggling to keep his tone even. Elizabeth sighed.
"I can't wait to leave this place."
"Nor can I," Nathaniel added truthfully.
"I think soon we shall let nature reclaim Primrose Isle."
On his feet, grimacing through a wave of pain in his belly, he gave Elizabeth a stiff bow, then leaned over Susanna to kiss Grace's plump cheek, clenching his fingers to keep from trembling. Susanna watched him intently, and hot tears pricked his eyes. He kissed her forehead and tore himself away, counting the minutes as the day ticked away more slowly than any he could recall. There were preparations to be made. In the end, he wore his funeral suit. It was somehow fitting, buttoning the black coat over his dark shirt, foregoing the waistcoat. He regarded himself in the tall mirror in the corner of his chamber. His hair was longer than when he'd left England, curling over his ears now, face dotted with a few new freckles. Any tan he'd acquired had faded during his convalescence, but the freckles remained. Somehow he appeared older, although he wasn't sure when he'd be able to grow a proper beard. He was too thin, and his weakened, soft muscles cried out for activity. They'd soon have it. He wished he had trousers instead of breeches, and boots rather than the silly black stockings and buckled shoes. But they would have to do. The most important thing he did have was his father's pistol, liberated from his study when Walter had been busy in the drawing-room shouting at Bart to see to the hasty construction of a gallows. Walter was determined to have his spectacle for the few dozen people left on Primrose Isle, for his lunatic pride. Carefully tucking the pistol into the back of his breeches, Nathaniel reached for his long, dark cloak and wrapped it around his shoulders. It made him think of Hawke's coat. The burning to see Hawke again, to smell and taste and hold him, set his head spinning. He hadn't wanted food at all. His stomach knotted with the wound and nerves. But he'd forced himself to eat bread and a cold chicken leg. He'd need every ounce of strength he could muster. Staring at himself critically in the flickering candlelight,
he weighed whether he was at all capable of appearing intimidating. The cloak helped, but he needed